views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely those of the individuals participating in the show. All persons described or mentioned in the podcast should be considered innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. This podcast contains subject matter such as violence and graphic descriptions along with adult language, which may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Because we are lazy and we are busy and we are not very good at this. Tonight, we are going to cover one of the most famous cases of all time with zero research. So join us on our little adventure as we try our best to cover the JonBenet Ramsey case. And take it away, Arlo.
All the unsolved murders in America, there is one that seems particularly haunting, the murder of six-year-old JonBenet Ramsey. And now, after decades of mystery, there might be some new leads in that case. Boulder, Colorado police have never given up in this case. And since her body was found the day after Christmas in 1996, they've been working with police departments and DNA experts across the country to keep a promise they made 27 years ago.
Mr. and Mrs. Ramsey, what do you want to say to the killer of your daughter?
We'll find you. We will find you. I have that as a sole mission for the rest of my life.
Mrs. Ramsey?
Likewise. The police and investigators have assured us that this is a case which can be solved. You know, you may be eluding the authorities for a time, but God knows who you are, and we will find you.
And unlike a lot of other cold cases, DNA testing...
Welcome to a deep, dark, dank, moist basement somewhere in the blackberry winter bowels of Georgia. Yes, boys and girls, that's a true thing. And if you don't believe me, come down here and you'll freeze your tuchus. Your tuchus off.
Yeah, it's been kind of cold. I don't like when it's cold in the morning and hot in the afternoon. I don't like that. Just be one thing.
Agreed. I woke up this morning.
I'm wearing shorts and a hoodie. That doesn't make any fucking sense.
But if it was fall, it would be perfect.
Yes.
But it's spring, and it's not perfect because it's bipolar weather down here. Now, I woke up this morning. It was a little chilly. You know, everybody's moving around, eat your breakfast, that stuff. I go log in, start teaching. I am freezing. Go get space heater. Turn it. I mean, I am blasting that thing for a solid hour and a half, and my hand's like the icy hand of death. Go walk down the hallway after teaching first period and look up at the thermostat. It's 64 degrees in my damn house.
Jesus.
Yeah, so I had to bump the damn heat on, brother. I mean, it was awful. It's awful. All right, ladies and gentlemen, from the opening, we are tackling the JonBenet Ramsey case. However,
we're going to do just a horrible job at it, I'm sure.
However, because we got such shit for the other high profile case, near and dear to Coach's heart, missing Mara Murray, we are telling you up front, this is not a deep dive. If we were going to do this case as a full on eyeballs deep case, it would be at least three parts. We decided not to do that.
We're just trying to put content out there.
Well, another thing that I thought about is this case has been done 100 times. Everybody should know the background information. If you don't, you got a pocket computer in your hand, probably listening to us. Open the Google and watch one YouTube video and you'll be right on schedule.
I mean, I didn't even do that. Like, I am literally 0.0 research.
Well, I will say that I did.
Busy, man.
Yeah. Well, state testing's about to kick off, so y'all, this may be the only episode y'all get before May.
Oh, now, we can't do that.
Well, it's only a week and a half.
They will riot in the streets.
Well, that is true. especially
our four loyal listeners.
Arkansas may implode.
Yeah, our four loyal listeners will not accept that.
Okay, so with that disclaimer out there, Coach, do you want to read your five-star reviews this time, or are you going to kick them down the road again?
Oh, yeah. We've got plenty.
Plenty.
No, I'm not going to kick it down the road. I'm going to have to look it up, though.
Plenty.
I mean, we've got like four.
Yeah.
In a very short amount of time. We got one from Jim Bob by God. What the fuck? I'm not sure how to say this name. Jim Bob Goodthen, I think, is his name. He said, 5 stars, my favorite podcast. Just love listening to y'all cutting up, making fun of each other and others. And a good story every week. Keep up the great work. Thanks for the great podcast. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I like it.
Let's see. We've got one. Cracker Carl with a K's. Says, cute redhead introduced me to y'all. I love a fucking redhead. I'm just going to say. Great to listen to a few country boys discussing the mysterious while enjoying a few cold ones. A cute redhead. She is a patron, and you've shouted her out multiple times. Turn me on to you, and I have been binging ever since. Unlike other pods, you two aren't performing. Just two buds talking, keep it up. Started over from the beginning, but thank all that is holy that you guys figured out the audio. Yeah, sort of. I mean, you did.
Up until tonight, and Zoom lost its fucking mind. It took 30 minutes to get it to work.
Dude, I couldn't possibly do this without you. Somebody asked me recently that they wanted to start a new podcast with me, but they weren't very technologically inclined. And I'm like, well, then we can't do it. Because if you're going to rely on me, ain't fucking happening.
Yeah, brother.
Anyway, we got one from Nanner Banana, Nanner Banana 69. Love these guys. I came for the mysteries and stayed for the coach.
Fuck yeah. Hold some fans.
The show has the perfect amount of thorough research and back and forth banter that keeps me coming back every week. I love that you guys cover such a wide variety of cases, and you're absolutely hilarious. Keep on killing it. You know, I'm telling you. I got a lot of feedback because I was unavailable. You did an episode by yourself.
It just wasn't the same.
Like, it wasn't the same.
Nope.
I'm like, I do very little.
But what you do is undeniable.
let's see. Kennedy said, love the show. Love the show and the topics covered. Even managed to overlook the I can't read. Even managed to overlook the being a Vols fan thing. Don't think I would have told nobody that.
At least he's not an Auburn fan.
I mean, fuck Auburn, dude. That's just disgusting. We got another one. Great podcast, 5 stars from Mr. 3FPS. This is quickly becoming my favorite podcast. I stumbled on this when searching for podcasts on missing summer whales. Summer disappeared from the region I live and work, and it's just heartbreaking. I appreciate the care in which all the stories are told. As a fellow Southerner, I appreciate the mix of Southern human and Southern common sense. You can never have too much of either. Also, Govals.
Oh, dang. Well, he is in the great state of Tennessee, so he should be a Vols fan. Well, we got one more.
We still got more, man. I didn't cover them last time, and I should have. What do y'all look like? From red, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I'm always way off when I picture someone in my mind based off their voice. Anyway, I don't listen in order, so sometimes Coach has a girlfriend, and sometimes he has a wife. Y'all keep me guessing. Well, just to clarify, about 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, my wife and I did get divorced. She is still a big part of my life. We are friends. She has a good boyfriend. I never thought I would like my ex-wife's boyfriend, but he's a pretty good dude. But we talk pretty often, and we're friends. She helps me deal with my various girlfriends leaving me. She's very supportive of that. And to update, I am currently single. So if anyone
ready to mingle, baby.
If anyone listening lives in Georgia and would like an overweight alcoholic that is very sweet and very loving, if you need one, let me know.
All right, so this is a first, and when I set this thing up, God, I guess when we first started Patreon, so that tells you how long ago that was. It is, it's called a welcome survey. What are you looking forward to the most? And it's not going to let me, is it? No.
What do you mean looking forward to the most?
By becoming a patron.
The impending apocalypse is basically all we have.
Well, Miss Waldrop decided that she would actually answer and put a little thought behind her answer. And she said that my daughter played us the Christmas cryptids over the holidays, and now I'm hooked. We're both fans of the research and on-air hijinks. Ever heard of the Pennsylvania Squonk? I have not. Have you heard of the Squonk?
What?
Pennsylvania Squonk.
Squonk.
S-Q-U-O-N-K.
I have not. I'm guessing it's some sort of Sasquatch hybrid.
I don't know. I've not even looked it up, to be honest with you.
Squonk.
Squonk. Pennsylvania Squonk. Okay, so we do have Miss Waldrop, who is a new stickateer since April the 18th. Very new, very new. She is our newest patron. So thank you all for the kind words. We aim to please. If you are a patron, remember you get the post-brews hangover exclusive episodes. So you need to let us know what you want to hear.
Okay, I don't know what a squonk is, but it's ugly as shit. It is, I don't know. It's a mythical creature. It's a mythical creature that is purported to live in Pennsylvania.
Well,
only been to Pennsylvania once. I went to Philadelphia to try out for Jeopardy, and I made it, but they never called.
Damn. Kind of like that redhead. Hey. Never called.
She needs to, though. She knows who she is.
She does.
She needs to call.
Okay, so if you were under a rock in the true crime world in the last day and a half, you have missed the fact that the Arkansas Supreme Court finally ruled in favor of Damien Echols requesting the DNA be tested.
Let me tell you something. That right there definitely confirms that they're not involved.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's not going to champion the Supreme Court.
A court
right.
To test DNA if your DNA was there.
Yeah.
No fucking way. But yeah.
Not at all.
I never believed that those three were involved. They got railroaded, and it's just a horrible, horrible case. But
it is, man.
They're doing well. Damien's written a few books, so
he's got a decent art career. Bob Ruff has become very good friends with him. And if you don't know Bob Ruff, he did the Oxygen Network special when the West Memphis Three, the Forgotten Three, and it's the original three kids, because the West Memphis Three centers around.
That is the sad. That is the saddest part.
Right. Yeah, the kids were kind of thrown.
That is the saddest part, is because those three victims kind of get forgotten.
And that's what I think.
It's unfortunate.
Damien's trying to do is trying to bring light to the fact that there's still somebody that killed three kids running around loose, and they need to do everything they can, despite the fact that those three entered an Alford plea, and it is technically a solved case. You still have three young boys whose lives were tragically lost early, 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 in a brutal fashion.
I mean, I can't help it, but I still think it was the stepdad.
He's still out there walking around, so I don't know, man. It's quite odd.
You keep talking. I gotta tinkle.
He's got to tinkle, boys and girls. He's got to tinkle. So here's what we're going to do. We are going to hit you with the basic information about the JonBenet Ramsey case, okay? And like I said in the opening, unless you were living under a rock, you should have heard about the JonBenet Ramsey case. Now, on December 25th, 1996, John and Patsy Ramsey saw their daughter, JonBenet, as they tucked her in bed that night. And according to the Boulder, or I'm not so certain it's Boulder Media, but it's a local media outlet in Colorado, 9 News, Patsy wakes up, however you want to say it, early the next morning, because the family had planned to fly to Atlanta, where John Ramsey's other children and his parents lived. And they were originally from Atlanta. They had moved to Boulder as part of John's business, and it was just easier, and they would fly back and forth. Now, when Patsy wakes up, she goes downstairs to start the coffee, and she finds a ransom note demanding $118,000 for the return of their daughter, JonBenet. Now, the note's author claimed to, quote, represent a small foreign faction and threatened to kill JonBenet if the family alerted law enforcement or tried to, quote, outsmart them. Now, the Denver Post originally reported that the family initially thought that JonBenet was only kidnapped before anything else has happened that morning. Okay. So you've got Patsy waking up. She goes downstairs, finds this ransom note, runs back upstairs to JonBenet's bedroom. And sure enough, JonBenet is not in her bed. There is no sign of her anywhere. So the note is extremely, extremely odd. And I'll put a link to the note on the website and as well as our socials. But the case is initially, I guess, not thought of, but so before I go any further, John and Patsy, to hell with what the note says, they alert Boulder police immediately. And that 911 call is heart-wrenching because Patsy is losing her damn mind. And she alerts 911 just before 6 a.m. and says that she, you know, her daughter's missing, she's found a note, and they're demanding money in return. So Patsy and John alert their neighbors and friends of what's happened. And so you have another family come over, and then word starts getting out in the community and families start coming in. and it's treated as a missing persons case. So they do a cursory search of the house when Boulder police arrive. They don't find anything. They take statements, they, you know, basic stuff, and they leave one detective there. And there is a new documentary, or, well, it's 2 years old now, but Tubi has it. That's going to be my recommendation. But in that, the detective that is stationed at the house tells John, because he's got all this nervous energy, he doesn't know what to do. And the ransom note states that they're going to call between 8 and 10 a.m. Well, 10 a.m. comes and passes. And in the note, it says that they're going to call between 8 and 10 a.m. tomorrow. So they don't know, was the note written Christmas Day? Christmas Eve? Was it written Christmas Day? Are they talking about, between 8 and 10 when they found the note? Or is the kidnappers talking about the next day between 8 and 10? So John's losing his damn mind. He's got all this energy. And so the detective tells him to go through the house and see if he can find anything that's out of place or something that catches his eye. So he goes to the basement. And when he gets to the basement, he sees a window that had been previously busted out by himself, because John is well known to lock himself out of their house. And so he would have to break a window to get in. He just never got around to fixing this window. I think it had cardboard on it, or maybe a piece of plywood over it. Anyway, it's got a little shutter door, and you can find these photos, and I'll try to post those too. The little shutter door to this window is open, but what's odd is underneath that window is a suitcase turned to where a person could step on the suitcase and hoist themselves through the window to get out, or come through the window and step down onto the suitcase and then onto the floor. So he makes a note of that, and him and his friend start searching the basement. And the way it's described in the documentary is John opens the door to what the family refers to as the cold storage room. And when he does, he finds JonBenet's lifeless body laying on the ground. So he runs over, swoops her up, starts screaming as he's running up the stairs. And the detective checks for a pulse. Sure enough, you know, JonBenet is no longer with us. So she is covered by a blanket. Now, it is
Did they find her that way?
They found her not covered by a blanket. They covered her because the one detective is the only police there. So she's alerted Boulder police. Hey, we found the girl. She's deceased. Well, here's the problem. And I'm kind of on the fence about this. If they got the original call and it was a kidnapping, they had a couple of officers go through the house, and supposedly an officer went into the basement but never opened that door to the cold storage room. No one knows why, but they didn't. And so there's nothing found, and that's when the police leave and they're sitting there waiting. They've alerted the FBI. They're going to trace the call. But it turns into a comedy of errors. Since it was a kidnapping to begin with, they never secured the scene. They never separated everyone and questioned them. They did not stop other people from coming into the house. By the time JonBenet's body is found, I think something like 25 people have come into the house. People are washing clothes. They're cleaning the kitchen. Somebody brought bagels and coffee. Everybody and their mother has touched the ransom note. And then all of a sudden, John finds JonBenet's body. When they cover her, he takes a blanket that Patsy was wrapped up in and covers her with it. So that contaminates anything that may have been on the body. So, like I said, it's a comedy of errors. And the Boulder police, you know, are taken to the woodshed because everybody's playing armchair detective and quarterbacking it, saying that basically they should have secured the scene, separated everyone, made them state what happened, what they remember, yada, yada, yada. So during the now murder investigation, they find a bowl of pineapple. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was not in the documentary. They just showed the bowl of pineapple. But JonBenet liked pineapple, but I think she liked it with like milk or sweet cream in it or something. And she loved to have, yeah, I know.
Yeah, Lord, that sounds awful.
Yeah. I when I first heard this, I was like, oh my God. But kids have some
pineapple and milk.
Yeah. Maybe like a half and half. I don't know. Anyway, I guess you get the sour, sweet, sour thing. I'm not sure. So anyway, somebody had fixed her a bowl of pineapple with some milk. In the fracas of finding the note, then finding her body, Patsy can't remember if she had made her that bowl of fruit after they had gotten home from a Christmas party, or if someone, and the someone being the murderer, got her up out of bed, brought her downstairs, and let her eat the pineapple as they were writing the note. Because the note is or was written on site, because authorities find a legal pad, and that is from that legal pad is where the ransom note came from. So you've got the 911 call coming in at 6 a.m. You've got police showing up, doing a cursory search. They're going to wait around, do this 8 to 10 thing because they're supposed to call with demands and yada, yada, yada. Well, it's not until after 1 p.m. that John actually finds JonBenet. And like I said, there was no preservation of evidence. Everybody and their mother was allowed to come in and out of the house. What evidence could have been down there has all been trampled all over. But the sad thing is, immediately, the media swoops in on John and Patsy because JonBenet was in these little child pageants. Now, according to John, this was something that Patsy did in her teenage years because she was originally from West Virginia. And I think she was Miss West Virginia in like 1976, 1977, somewhere in there. And so she had entered JonBenet in a pageant, I think just to give her something to do when she was like 4 or 5. And JonBenet loved it. And the way John talks is that it was not a chore. Like, they wasn't in there whipping JonBenet to go to all these pageants. She loved doing it. The only thing he said that was a stickler for JonBenet was she would not enter a pageant unless there was some sort of talent aspect so that she could sing. She loved to sing. And what's bad is you lose sight of, or at least I did until I started watching that, she was just a 6-year-old little girl, man. They have, I don't know if they've sensationalized her or if the media has just formed her into being older than she really was. Because when you see the pictures, she does not look 6 years old. She looked.
You don't think?
Well, I'm not saying that she looks like 27. I'm just saying she, to me.
I know that.
I'm just saying that to me, she looks like some, like a child that's closer to the age of 10. I don't know why, but that's just my goofy little brain. I guess throughout the years, that's what's going on. So if you've not clued in, this is happening in 1996. So this is Christmas of 1996. We have some basic DNA stuff that we know. But like I said, they didn't secure the crime scene. And so there's just what initial evidence could be there.
Do we fault the police for that? I mean, they thought it was a kidnapping. There was a ransom note.
Well, see, and that's where I'm at. I'm on the fence.
I mean, can you blame them for not treating the house
as a crime scene? See, I don't know. That's why I said I was on the fence. I mean, on one hand, I can see the public's outrage of why did you not go in and take, at least do, I don't know how to verbalize it, but basically kind of separate everybody out and make sure. And here's the other thing. If it was a kidnapping and you knew that someone had come in and taken that little girl in the middle of the night, early morning hours, why in the hell are you letting all these fucking people come in? Because initially you should have just stopped, closed the door and taken DNA fingerprints from John, Patsy, and Burke, the brother, and anybody else that was there initially when the police arrived. So if the friends are there, they get locked down, but nobody else is coming in. So I see that side of it, but I also see the other side of, right now it's been reported as a kidnapping. It's not a murder investigation. We don't have to go through every room of the house with a fine-tooth comb. But it's, you can make an argument for both sides of that.
I mean, it's hard for me to fault the police at this point, because I would have treated it like a kidnapping. There was a ransom note. I mean, how do you know? I mean, how do you?
Right. I think that's the only stickler is the police. And I will say, whether or not it's a kidnapping or a murder, police should have kind of limited who was coming and going from the house, or at least kept a record of who was coming and going from the house. I still don't think they know exactly who was there that morning. So, and the house is this. Here's what's crazy. The house is 7,000 square feet. It's three or four levels.
Yeah, it's a huge house.
I mean, yes. Now, there's a little bit of a timeline that we want to go over. And like I said, we are giving you just the basic knowledge here about this case. You know, we're not diving deep into John and Patsy's background, where they were born, how they were raised, how they met. All of that stuff's out there in any documentary you ever watch about this case. So we wanted to touch on the timeline after we gave you the initial background information. Okay, so just Christmas 1996, we originally think that she's been kidnapped. Patsy makes the 911 call. Police arrive. It's not until after 1 p.m. that John finds her body in the cold storage room in the basement. All right. But what's weird is on December the 23rd of 1996, just 3 days before her body is found, there's a 911 call made from the Ramsey's home. Now, it's not until January the 10th that Boulder police report that it was likely a mistake call made by a drunk party guest.
Well, that's kind of odd.
It is extremely odd. Now, I will say the Ramseys did love to have people over and entertain their friends. I think John said in that documentary that I watched that Patsy went all out for Christmas. Every room had a Christmas tree. Every room had some kind of theme. So she went the whole nine yards for Christmas. They had their friends over to have Christmas dinners and Christmas parties. So while that is an odd thing, it's not out of the realm of possibility. Somebody gets hammered and calls 911 by mistake.
I've been pretty intoxicated in my day, and I've never accidentally called 911.
Yeah, me either. So I'm just saying it's plausible. Not that I've ever done it or known anybody to do it when they were drunk.
I wouldn't know of anyone that would do such a thing.
So we've got December the 25th. Now, you've got the Ramseys attending a Christmas party at a friend's house, and that is the family friend Fleet White and his wife and children. Fleet's children were around the same age as JonBenet and Burke. So the Whites and the Ramseys kind of hung out together. They went skiing together. I think both families' kids were in ski school. John talks about how they went skiing at least three or four times a year. So Christmas morning, so this is So the day after Christmas is when all of this goes down. So they're thinking she was kidnapped late Christmas day, early the day after Christmas. But Christmas morning, JonBenet gets a bike for Christmas. Then they go to, like I said, the Christmas party at Fleet Watt's house. And I believe they stay out pretty late. And I think John takes JonBenet up. And there's a discussion between John and Patsy about which whether she should just go to sleep in her clothes that she's currently in or should she change. I think Mama's like, look, let's just put her in the pajamas. It's not going to wake her up. So they do. We get into the 25th or the 26th about whether or not that pineapple snack is eaten, who makes it. Because during the autopsy, they found some undigested fruit in JonBenet's stomach. Now, December the 26th, this is when Patsy calls and the note says, quote, you will withdraw $118,000 from your account. $100,000 will be in $100 bills and the remaining $18,000 in $20 bills. Now, what's odd about this amount of $118,000 is this was the exact amount of John's Christmas bonus, which leads you or anyone else that's ever looked into this as someone that either John worked with or knew about John's Christmas bonus had something to do with this. And the other thing is, it's just an odd amount. Why not ask for $200,000, $250,000, a million? Why $118,000 and so specifically that you wanted it $100,000 in $100 bills and $18,000 in 20s? I don't get it.
That's definitely very suspicious.
So the officer in question that did the cursory search of the basement was Mr. Rick French. No one knows why he never opened that door. He did go through the basement, but he did not open that door. So Linda Arndt is the detective that was stationed at the house or left there to kind of talk to the family. Now, this is while it's still theorized that this is a kidnapping. And so Fleet White and John Ramsey basically, like I said, were nervous wrecks. And that's when Arndt's like, all right, search this house top to bottom. See if you can find me something, which I don't blame her either. And that's when the body's discovered. Now, she was strangled and she had black duct tape across her mouth. She was strangled with a ligature or a garrote made from what appears to be a busted paintbrush from a paint bucket in the basement. And that busted paintbrush was shattered into three pieces. There was the piece that was used for the garrote. There was the remaining piece in the paint bucket, but there's also a sliver of that paintbrush that's never been found. I really don't want to go into the specifics of the autopsy just because she's a six-year-old and I ain't got it in me.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary.
If you want to know about all the
brutally murdered.
Yeah, and she was sexually assaulted at six. So that's terrible. Just leave it at that. Her occipital bones were fractured, and that's also something that's odd in the whole when you put all of this together. So it is not until 10:45 on the day after Christmas. So she's found at 1 p.m. It is not until 10:45 that the coroner for Boulder County removes JonBenet from the residence. The Ramseys are up front at the beginning. John's like, look, I know you're going to start with us. Let's get this over with. Here's my DNA. He gave them hair samples, pubic hair samples, saliva samples, toothbrush, anything he could think of. Him and Patsy and Burke did. They just threw it at the police and was like, look, you need to have all this. Let's get this cleared. Get us out of the way and let's find who killed my daughter. Well, I don't know if it's incompetence or if they're just out of their league, but the authorities quickly think that John or Patsy, one, had something to do with JonBenet's death. They also were looking at John's older children from a previous marriage, John Andrew and Melinda, but they had solid alibis, so they were ruled out. John and Patsy go as far as to give blood and handwriting samples. And according to one of the things that I read, the handwriting samples, you have a one, they didn't write, they wrote it, matter of fact, a five, there's no way in hell they wrote it. And John scores a five, Patsy scores a 4.5, but the authorities and the media swarm on the fact that Patsy's is not a five like John's. So they switch gears and John and Patsy are crucified in the tabloids. Well, it's about this time that John has a friend who is a lawyer that contacts him and is like, look, I just got word from someone inside the Boulder Police Department. They're seriously looking at you and Patsy. You need to get a lawyer and you need to get a very good lawyer. And so they do. And that is seen in the public's eye when this case first started as the Ramseys have something to hide. And it's not that case. We always say it in everything that we talk about. The first thing out of your mouth when they question you is lawyer.
Absolutely.
Because if you don't believe us,
I'm not doing any type of interrogation without a lawyer.
If you don't believe us, look right at what we talked about earlier. Damien Echols was on fucking death row for a murder he did not commit. And there are countless other people out there that have been interviewed, interrogated for 6+ hours, and they have nothing. What's that one documentary, Making a Murderer? That kid that had the lower IQ thought that if he just confessed, he could go home and watch WrestleMania.
Yes, it was.
So don't think that shit just, I mean, if they've got you in their sights, you better have a damn lawyer, whether you're guilty or innocent. Hell of a lot better if you have it when you're innocent. But anyway. All right. So December 28th, the family goes to the Boulder police station. Like I said, they give all of these samples and they clear John's other children. December 29th, John and Patsy and Bert fly to Atlanta. They had already had this trip scheduled. So in their minds, they're leaving this investigation to the Boulder police. And who wants to sleep in the house they just found your baby girl murdered in? And they're originally from Atlanta, so they fly home. On December the 31st, 1996, JonBenet's funeral is held. She's laid to rest in Marietta, Georgia, next to her older half-sister, Elizabeth, who had passed away in a tragic car accident in 1992. Roughly 200 family and friends attend the ceremony at the Ramseys' old church. And here's where, and this happens every fucking time, people come out of the woodwork, and thank God, Patsy was smart. She wore a dark veil to the funeral, so you really couldn't see her expressions. But I guarantee you, people were trying to eyeball and see if she was crying. Were those crocodile tears? How did John act? Did John cry? Here's the deal, people. They just lost their fucking 6-year-old child. No one knows how you're going to react when you're put in that situation. John is the man of the household. He's going to try to be as strong as he can for Patsy. Patsy's losing her fucking mind. Burke, I think, is 8 or 9 at the time, maybe 10. He's kind of old enough that he understands, but I guarantee you it's not really registering for him. So John's got to be the rock of the family. And he's crucified in the tabloids and the media because, well, he didn't cry at his daughter's funeral. Well, you know what? Fuck you. He can grieve how he wants to grieve. I'll kick that soapbox out of the way now. We can get on with the rest of this case. So January 1st, 1997, John and Patsy, have this friend that talks them into giving this interview to CNN while they're in Atlanta. And this thing is 45 minutes long, and Patsy is heavily sedated. Heavily. And
I mean, can you blame her?
No, though? No, no, no. And that's the thing. Looking
if
at
my
it.
My 6-year-old daughter was murdered.
You would have to damn near put me on a drip.
I mean, I'm heavily sedated most nights. And I have no children. If I had a 6-year-old daughter that was murdered, I would definitely be on a drip.
Yeah. You'd have to put me on. And there, but there's no way I could have formed cohesive sentences. I would have been such a wreck. But during this interview with CNN, they kind of get a comment from the Boulder police. The Boulder police are reassuring everyone in Boulder, hey, we don't have this murderer on the run. And Patsy's like, the fuck you don't? Quote, there is a killer on the loose. If I were a resident of Boulder, I would tell my friends to keep your babies close to you. There's someone out there, end quote. She goes on to add, quote, America is suffering because have lost faith in the American family. We are Christian, God-fearing people. We love our children. We would do anything for our children, end quote. January the 2nd, 1997, investigators follow the Ramseys to Georgia. A team of 5 detectives from Boulder fly to Atlanta, and according to CNN, investigators were shocked that the Ramseys granted CNN the TV interview since they had claimed to be too emotional to talk to police. Well, yeah. Like I said, she was heavily sedated and they were talked into this interview by a friend. And John even says in that documentary that I watched that it was probably not the smartest thing they'd ever done. January the 3rd, detectives reveal the ransom note was written inside the house. Boulder cops even travel to John's home state of Michigan and search a summer home that they had owned previously or currently owned. January the 8th, 1997, news comes out that there may have been, quote, a practice ransom note. Because it looks like they found in a waste basket when they were collecting evidence a piece of that same legal pad that had the Mr. Ramsey written at the top of it, and then it was crumpled up and thrown away, and then the other ransom note is written. And yes, I have forgotten about who signed it. It's a S something. I can't think of it right now. I don't remember what they called it. Anyway, so you've got even though they cleared the half brother, the John's previous kids from a previous marriage, they still question his son, John Andrew. Even though he had a rock solid alibi and was out of town, they still. And this is where the public starts to turn against the Boulder police, because it's almost like they have blinders on and they're trying to make the evidence they have fit to John or Patsy. March the 7th, new handwriting analysis start. Like I said, John's eliminated pretty quickly. He scores a 5. Well, Patsy's not. She scores a 4.5. So they ask her to write not one more, not two more, not even 4 more, but 5 more writing samples. They, again, in March of 97, searched that Michigan home looking for, I guess, a unrehearsed ransom note. I don't know. April the 3rd is the first DNA testing that takes place. And there was unknown DNA found on JonBenet's pajamas and her underwear. They finally test that against John, Patsy, and Burke, and the unknown male DNA is not a match to anyone in the household. However, they know this. Now, this is what pisses me off to the nth degree. They know this. The Boulder police know this. And yet, they do not come out and say, this DNA sample is not a match to John. It's not a match to Burke, or it's not a match to Patsy. They just let them get crucified in the tabloids and the media. Officially, on April 19th, John and Patsy become the prime suspects of the investigation. Boulder DA Alex Hunter says, quote, obviously the focus is on these people. Patsy, on April the 30th, 1997, is questioned for 6.5 hours. John.
That is a very, very long time.
Yeah. John is questioned for 2 hours. Now, what is odd is the police take their statements during these interviews, questioning, whatever you want, interrogations, however you want to frame it. And they use these statements that John and Patsy give 4.5 months after JonBenet's murdered as the statements from the family. Not the statements they collected right after her body's found. They are now honed in on these 4-month-old statements given 4 months after the murder. So May the 2nd, John and Patsy speak to the local press, and John stumbles over JonBenet's name and addresses the rumors of her possibly being sexually molested, calling those the most hurtful innuendos. He was, when I say crucified, y'all, this man was put through the ringer. And he says in that documentary, I've lost my child. There's not much else you can do to me that's going to hurt any worse than that. But he said that one where he was in the media where they said that he had molested her from a younger age, that just about killed him. And there's no basis. This is all rumor and innuendo, because for them to have this theory, you would have to have some kind of evidence other than hearsay. And that's the only thing that's out there. Is just hearsay. And Patsy's so pissed off, she says, quote, I'm appalled that anyone would think that John or I would be involved with such a hideous and heinous crime, but let me assure you, I did not kill JonBenet. And you've got numerous detectives interrogating John and Patsy, and every one of them ask them, did you kill your daughter? And they're both like, no, no, let's get past this. Let's find the real murderer. July the 12th, all of JonBenet's bedroom furniture is moved to Atlanta, because what they don't tell you is the Ramseys gut that house and move back to Atlanta. They take everything, not just her bedroom furniture, and that's the way it's portrayed in the media. July 14th, the autopsy report is released. Like I said, you can look into that if you want to, but the one thing I will add is there was an 8.5-inch fracture to her little skull.
Oh, that's terrible.
It is, man. So January the 15th, 1998, the Ramseys absolutely refused to interview with authorities anymore. They are asking to review evidence before giving any more interviews to police. The police are like, nope. We're not going to talk to you about any new evidence, but we want to talk to you about other things. And they're like, nope, go pound sand. We got a lawyer. But about 2 weeks later, in good faith, John and Patsy both submit the clothes that they were wearing the day of JonBenet's death to the police.
I mean, you have to admit, the fact that they stonewall the police at some point does not look good on them. But again, you would have to like see it from their perspective. I mean, surely at that point they're like, we've told everything that we can tell.
And they've given everything they could give. They've given hair, blood, urine, semen, pubic hair samples. They've given handwriting samples. They've given the clothes they were wearing, and they're still after them. They're like, you know what? No, fuck you. We're not talking to you anymore.
I mean, it doesn't look good.
No, it doesn't, but
at the same time, It's like, what more could they have done?
Yeah, that's what I don't understand. I don't know what else they could have done in the public's eye or the police's eye to make themselves more available. I don't know.
I mean, when you break it down like that, it's like, okay, yeah, they did everything they could. And eventually they're like, look, we got to fucking move on. You have nothing on us. If you did, you would charge us. What more could they do?
Yeah. Well, on March the 12th, 1998, a grand jury is convened, and investigators formally petition the grand jury to seek. The way it was presented was, I think they tried to indict John on the molestation. And the case's lead investigator, Mark Beckner, says that there are, quote, significant results from the 1,058 pieces of evidence taken from the Ramsey's home, but he would not share the details of those 1,058 pieces of evidence. Well, there's a kind of like a task force from the state DA that's formed, and so they push this grand jury. The grand jury is going to indict him on child molestation. They're thinking that if they can get him into jail with on these charges, they can get him to crack and confess to murdering his daughter. The local DA's like, no, full stop, fuck off. I'm not serving. I'm not indicting it. It's dead end. There's no evidence that shows not only did he molest her or did he kill her. It is a witch hunt, and I'm not going to be a part of it. And I have to tip my hat to that local DA. You know, because I think he saw not only was it going to be professional suicide to try that in front in a court in front of a jury, because they really didn't have anything to tie him to either of those other than hearsay. There was no medical evidence. There was no police reports. None of that. On June the 10th, JonBenet's brother is brought in. Now, this is one of the key theories in this case. He was 9 at the time that she was murdered, and when they bring him in, he is 11. He is questioned, I think, through a child psychologist, but I believe he's cleared within a couple of days from what I can gather. Just after him, Burke, being questioned, the Denver detective Steve Thomas resigns from the case, calling the case, quote, crippled. He writes an 8-page resignation letter stating that Hunter's office has crippled the case since elements have been thoroughly compromised. And according to the Denver Post, Governor Roy Romer inquires as to whether he needs to step in. And eventually he does. Fleet White asks for Hunter to be taken off the case and someone else assigned to the case. Then we get to one of the key things in this case, the 911 call. And supposedly, if you slow it down and isolate the voices, it's hard. I still don't hear it, and it's been played 100 times, but a lot of people do hear it. During the original 911 call, supposedly you can hear Burke say something in the background and Patsy shushes him. And something about, I'm sorry, or I didn't mean to, is what people hear. Again, I can't hear it, but it is what it is. That 911 tape has been enhanced, like I said, isolated. Burke's voice is reportedly heard in the background, and it is very, very minute. You've got September 24th, 1998, another detective quits, citing that there's too much focus on John and Patsy, and this detective is Lou Smith. He types in his resignation letter stating, quote, a very dangerous killer is still out there. This gives John and Patsy's lawyers the fuel they need to kind of levy the authorities to shift gears and look somewhere else other than them. So you've got October 20th, 1998. There's two stories in the National Enquirer, and these stories had said that an anonymous source said that John believed photographer Stephen Miles killed JonBenet. John has to go back to Colorado and face Miles in a civil case. I don't believe anything ever happened, and I don't think that John really ever said that. Fast forward to December the 3rd of 1998, almost 2 years after JonBenet's death, DNA evidence is requested for John, Patsy, Burke, and John's two other children. They are supposedly trying to rule everyone out. Well, they do. They quietly do, but they do not release that to the press. January the 28th, 1999, a teddy bear takes center stage of the investigation. Investigators appeal to the online community to try and find information about a Santa Claus teddy bear that was reportedly found in JonBenet's bedroom. They were hoping to find the manufacturer and where it was sold, and trying to link some dots together. Fast forward to March, you've got yet another detective resigning. This one is the original detective on the scene, Detective Arndt. She's like, I'm out. May 19th of 1999 is when Burke is officially not a suspect. He is now 12. Detective Arndt is not. Arndt says she knows who the killer is, but won't say who it is on the air. She tells Good Morning America this on September 13th, 1999. And there has been some TikTok videos out there, and I'm sure you can look up JonBenet or whatever. And I think Dateline or 2021 interviews her, and I'm going to tell you something. She had seen something. She saw something that day that shook her to the core, because she is just wide-eyed when she starts retelling how JonBenet's body's found. John's previous two children, John Andrew and Melinda, are officially cleared on September 30th, 1999. The Ramseys publish a book called The Death of Innocence about JonBenet's murder, along with a publicity campaign to promote it on March 17th, 2000. They also hold a press conference on May the 24th, 2000, and they announced that lie detector tests confirmed that they are innocent in the death of their daughter. However, the test wasn't run by the FBI, so the Boulder police are not accepting those tests. Of course they're not. What we did not touch on in the background information was that Patsy had been battling cancer way before JonBenet passes away. She had, I think, gotten stage 4 ovarian cancer in 1993.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And so she had gone into remission and by 95, 96. And unfortunately, in 2006, Patsy's cancer comes back and she passes away on June 24th, never knowing who murdered her daughter. She is buried next to JonBenet in Marietta on June 29th, 2006. Fast forward to September 12th, 2016. Burke breaks his silence but reveals no further answers. After 20 years of silence, Burke sits down with the man himself, Dr. Phil, and says, quote, "It probably was some pedophile in the pageant audience." And that was his theory. But again, remember, he was 9 when it happened.
And he was just completely vilified. Like, everyone's convinced that he was responsible. And there's just no evidence to prove that.
No, there's not.
I mean, didn't he get like several million dollars?
Yeah,
he got like a settlement from someone.
He filed numerous defamation suits against CBS over the claims that they stated he killed his sister. And it was settled in 2019 out of court. You know, there was lots of zeros after that comma.
Oh, yeah. He definitely got seven or eight figures from that settlement.
Yeah. So let's get into some of the unanswered questions, and then we'll start trying to wrap this thing up with suspects and stuff. So the thing is, was there forced entry into the Ramsey's home? Actually, there's not any footprints found in the snow, but there was a boot print later discovered, and not all the ground surrounding the house had been searched originally. Again, this is where the Boulder police kind of screw the pooch on some things, even though it was initially stated as a kidnapping. It also emerges, like I said, about the broken window. They find pry marks on a door on the outside. You've got busted glass down in the basement. No one can say for certain if that's the same busted glass that from the window that John broke to get back in the house several months earlier. I don't know, man. I think there is enough forced entry there that it should have been seen in the initial search, even though they were thinking it was a kidnapping. Another question that's asked all the time, was JonBenet's murder planned, or was it an accident, or was it last minute? I think it was planned, man. They broke into the house. They're demanding a ransom. She's killed in the house. And there's some theories about that suitcase underneath that window. They're thinking, because when they open that suitcase up, they find a duvet cover in it, and they're thinking that the kidnapper / killer initially thought they could put her in that suitcase and get her through that window and get her out. And then realizes real quick that suitcase is not going through that window. And that's when they hide her body in that cold storage room. One theory that was posed was that it was a botched kidnapping. Now, John Wesley Anderson, who has written a new book about the murder and is among a private team investigating this case, told The Independent he believed, quote, the killer went into the house with a kidnap kit. He brought duct tape. He brought parachute cord. He brought a stun gun to immobilize JonBenet. So this was a very calculated and methodical person. It was a very well planned out, executed kidnapping attempt that went wrong and ended up in murder, end quote. What was the motive? Well, was the motive to kidnap, or was the motive as a revenge towards John or Patsy? Now, the Ramsey's work, financial and personal affairs, and connections have all been explored, and every area of their lives have been dissected by journalists, authorities, and armchair detectives. Proponents of the camp of John and Patsy Kilder state that the rest of the family is covering up for him. Again, it's hearsay. There's no evidence to back that claim up. I don't know, man. I really don't know. Is there enough DNA evidence to test? Now, John has been petitioning the Boulder police for years and the district attorney to test the DNA against CODIS. And when you watch that, or if you watch that documentary on Tubi about it, towards the end, they show the evidence list that as of 2022, when that documentary was made, the Boulder police had never submitted for DNA testing. It will boggle your mind. I kind of went into that documentary thinking John was a little shady about some of the stuff. About halfway through that documentary, man, it is very clear he had nothing to do with it at all. So you've got the family and John pushing for additional DNA testing. the Boulder Police Department and the district attorney in November of 2023 is asking the Colorado case cold case review team to look into it. Other Boulder police, like Boulder County Sheriff's Office, the FBI, the Colorado Bureau of Investigation, and Colorado's Department of Public Safety, several private labs across the country have offered their expertise and services, and they're looking for that genealogical DNA, kind of like how they caught the Night Stalker. And, quote, the amount of DNA evidence available for analysis is extremely small and complex. The sample could, in whole or in part, be consumed by additional DNA testing. And this was a press release in collaboration with the Colorado Bureau of Investigation and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. There have been several discussions with private DNA labs about the viability of continued testing of DNA recovered from the crime scene and genetic genealogy analysis. Whether this is a proven technology that can reliably test forensic samples consistent with samples that we currently hold. Basically, they said, no, they're not doing it. So the main question is the killer still on the loose? There have been a ton of possible suspects, I guess, in JonBenet's murder. Of course, we kind of touched on John and Patsy and Burke. But there was a older man named Santa Bill who played Santa Claus for that neighborhood, the neighborhood that they were living in. He had one of his own children molested something, I think maybe 10 years, 12 years. I can't remember now. To the date that JonBenet died. I'm trying to get to Santa Bill. Where the hell is she? Or is he? There he is. People around Santa Bill said he had this uncanny infatuation with JonBenet around Christmas time. I don't know. He's now deceased, but his real name was Bill McReynolds. I think he was officially cleared with the DNA evidence. He was rumored to have paid a little too much attention, like I said, to JonBenet, going as far as to arrange a secret visit from Santa Claus on Christmas. Supposedly, he had chosen JonBenet to be, quote, his special friend and was going to bring her a vial of glitter gifted to him by the six-year-old when he had heart surgery. And, of course, under the microscope of the tabloids, this was construed as he is a dirty old man and a creep. But I don't really believe, other than just her giving him this little memento while he was recovering from heart surgery, I don't really think it goes any further than that. The other suspect was the town drifter, Gary Olivia. Was a 32-year-old known sex offender who lived in Boulder when JonBenet was found strangled to death. The convicted pedophile, Mr. Olivia, had been in and out of the area, and police allegedly found magazine cutouts of JonBenet in his backpack when he was arrested on the campus of Colorado University in Boulder. He was trying to seek warmth inside, I think, the library foyer at the University of Colorado. He just happened to be a little high, and so they arrested him, went through his backpack, found some shady shit. Now, the Ramsey's longtime private investigator, Ollie Gray, once referred to Olivia's ties to JonBenet as a bombshell arrest. But they didn't have anything really to go on because he was kind of cleared by that DNA evidence. What was odd was the magazine clippings of JonBenet and the fact that he knew the knots that were used to fashion the garrote that strangled JonBenet. So, again, while he is a grade A piece of shit creep, he was cleared by the DNA. There was another suspect, the electrician. And this was a man named Michael Helgoth, who worked in a nearby auto salvage yard. He was referred to as, quote, a hellraiser and tied to the property dispute involving the Ramseys. I don't know what kind of property dispute, but the possible motive was that he was seeking revenge on the Ramseys and was going to kidnap JonBenet. Now here's what's odd. Supposedly there's a partial boot print that was found near the Ramseys' home or on the grounds of the home. This boot print allegedly is a match to one of Helgoth's boots. And when officials in the case start checking in on him and he catches wind of it, he commits suicide. And this was just 2 days after the Boulder DA in 1997 held a press conference saying that they were zeroing in on a new suspect. However, his DNA did not match the unknown male DNA found on JonBenet's clothing. One of the most odd suspects is a former school teacher, John Mark Carr. In 2006, he just confesses out of the blue to strangling her and how he graphically details what he did to her. This is part of that documentary where they go into great detail about how he was arrested in Thailand because he was living on the lam after he was found with child pornography in California. He had contacted the University of Colorado at Boulder's professor Michael Tracy and told him initially that he was the killer. Tracy contacts Boulder police and the FBI. There's this whole sting, and they basically get him to give them an address in Thailand. So they basically work with the Bangkok police to arrest this man. Bangkok? They don't call it Bangkok for nothing, baby.
That's true. That is very true.
So while he was a very good suspect, again, he was cleared by the DNA evidence. So basically everyone that's brought forward is cleared by this DNA evidence. So we really have no idea who it was. The last person of interest, I guess, was the housekeeper, but this was a woman. She had worked for the Ramseys. Mervyn Pugh was the Ramseys' handyman, and his wife, Linda Hoffman Pugh, was the housekeeper. And so she's kind of looked at, even though she did not fit the profile of, I don't know, a male depositing DNA on a six-year-old that they had murdered. But again, it is one of those weird situations. It comes out that Miss Hoffman Pugh was struggling financially and had asked John and Patsy for a loan of several thousand dollars, which John and Patsy declined to give her. Police show up at this lady's house the night after the murder and ask her to write the number 180,000 on a piece of paper and reportedly took her fingerprints and several strands of her hair. She then testified in front of a grand jury for a total of 8 hours, including a statement against Patsy that read, quote, "I think she had multiple personalities. She'd be in a good mood and then she'd be cranky. She got into arguments with JonBenet about wearing a dress or about a friend coming over. I had never seen Patsy so upset," end quote. So basically, they find this housekeeper that was shunned by John and Patsy when she asked for money. They bring her in front of the grand jury, and so she can just run John and Patsy down into the mud. But again, there's no suspects out there as of right now. I know that through CrimeCon in 2022, this case was put forth, and there was a petition. Change.org had a petition where they were trying to get the governor to release all of that untested evidence to private labs so that that genealogical DNA testing could be done. I don't know, man. This is one of those cases. I think it could be solved if they did the genealogical DNA testing on that unknown sample, but I'm not sure we'll ever know, because according to the police, that sample is so small now that they're afraid that once they, if they don't sequence it, they're going to lose it forever.
Well, I don't understand why they wouldn't go ahead and sequence it then.
Well, I agree with you, but there's a lot of fuckery going on when it comes to the evidence that has been tested and has not been tested by the Boulder police. They've not done themselves any favors with some of their shenanigans. Like I said earlier, I'm kind of on the fence when the case first started about whether to treat it, whether to lock down the house. But like you said, it was reported as a kidnapping to begin with. So why would you lock it down? So that, ladies and gentlemen,
You can criticize them all you want, but at the same time, it was literally a kidnapping. I don't know why they would lock the house down. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the only thing, I think this is where I go back and forth. The only thing that I kind of hung up on is if it is a kidnapping and you thought the perpetrator had been in the house, then lock that motherfucker down and take samples from everybody that was currently there when you arrived on scene. Don't allow 45 other fucking people to come in and start washing dishes and bringing in coffee and washing sheets and shit like that. I think that's where I kind of draw the line.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. That's a fair assessment.
But that is our pinky toe dip into the JonBenet case. Again, full disclaimer, this would have been at least a three-parter if we dove deep into this. But Coach and I had discussed it this past weekend. We feel like this case has been done so much that just sitting down and going through all of the same old evidence over and over, that by the time we got to our theories and new evidence in part three or four, everybody'd be like, for fuck's sake, just get to the point. So we decided we'd do a short version of it. But that is the JonBenet case, a la the Bruise Boys. My recommendation, like I said, is the Tubi documentary called Suburban Nightmare, JonBenet Ramsey. It's an hour and 35 minutes long. John is one of the main people in the documentary. There's also a lot of podcasters on this documentary. There is a lady on there. If you watch this, full disclosure on this one, there is a lady on there that has, it looks like sequins around her eyes. She looks very gothic. They say in the documentary, former Boulder resident. Well, if you do a little bit of Googling and look her up, she's actually a podcast host about the paranormal. They never say that in the documentary. So just if you see her, you're going to be like, why in the fuck is this girl on there? And that just says Boulder, former Boulder resident. But anyway, there's a couple of authors on there. The lead investigator for John's on there. So they do a very good job. Like I said, I went into it thinking, hell, this is just going to be another one. But I walked away from it with a new respect for John, and my heart goes out for him, man. Hopefully before he passes. Which he, is he still alive before I even say anything?
I think he is, yeah.
Hopefully before he passes, they will he will get some kind of closure in this. Yes, he is 80 years old.
Hey, oh, wow.
Still 80. Kicking. Yep. 80 years old, man. So, yeah, my heart goes out to him. My heart goes out to Burke for having to go through what they've gone through. But anyway, Coach, what's your recommendation or what's your take on this whole shit show?
My recommendation is hold on 1 second. I had it pulled up. It is Files of the Unexplained on Netflix. They cover the Yuba County Five, and then they cover Lake Lanier, which, as we both know, being residents of Georgia, you don't fucking go to Lake Lanier.
No, sir, you don't.
It is haunted as shit.
Yes, and despite what they say on that TV program, there is cemeteries underneath that lake.
Oh, absolutely. 110%.
All right, Coach, you got anything else?
You didn't give your, you know?
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, you did give your recommendation.
See?
Nope. I'm good.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Deuces.